Hello, and welcome to Ordinary Philosophy Podcast. Here, you can listen to interviews and audio renditions of pieces published at Ordinary Philosophy's website, dedicated to philosophy in the public square and the history of ideas that change the world. For more about Ordinary Philosophy, and to see the photographs and sources and inspiration for each piece, please visit ordinaryphilosophy.com. I'm Amy Cools, creator and editor of Ordinary Philosophy. Episode 104, Peoria, Illinois, in search of Robert G. Ingersoll, Frederick Douglass, and Abraham Lincoln, Part 1. Peoria, Illinois, July 28, 2017. I awake in a spotlessly clean, perfectly comfortable, aggressively unimaginative Motel 6 hotel room on the north end of Peoria, Illinois. I've noticed that Motel 6s are much better than they used to be when I was a child and young adult, at least in terms of cleanliness and amenities. They were never glamorous, but they now have less character. For many years, for example, the beds sported these wonderfully colorful blankets printed with stylized images of famous cities and landscapes all over the United States. Now, the rooms and draperies are beige, highlighted with rust orange, furnished with the plainest of mid-century style designs, angular objects only occasionally relieved by a sleek curve here and there. My term for this sort of accommodation is people storage. Strictly utilitarian, uninspired, and uninspiring. Perhaps that's a good thing for my purposes. I fled the room as soon as I could to place myself in a more interesting environment. Still, I'm irritated, as I so often am with modern architecture and interior design. Why have we stopped bothering to go on artistic flights of fancy, then directing those inspirations towards making these things beautiful? My first destination is a quick stop to see a bust of Abraham Lincoln at Tower Park in Peoria Heights. It's a cast bronze derived from a plaster model by sculptor Gutzon Borglum for his most famous work, the Mount Rushmore National Memorial Sculpture in the Black Hills. Here, it's mounted on a grooved stony concrete pedestal near a Gold Star Memorial dedicated to the families of slain soldiers. I'll be visiting the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum in Springfield soon, so I'll see the original plaster cast there. More about this sculpture to follow. Lincoln was a regular visitor to Peoria, first visiting in 1832 to buy a canoe on the way home to New Salem from serving briefly as a captain in the Black Hawk War. His election to this position by the men of his company was among the proudest moments of his life. And he visited many more times throughout his legal and political career. His first campaign speech was also in Peoria, in 1840, during a Whig rally for presidential candidate William Henry Harrison. There's no record of what he said there that day, but many accounts of his early speeches describe a man initially hesitant and shy, whose eloquence increased as his confidence did. Peoria is a site of one of his greatest oratorial triumphs. I'll tell the story once I reach the site where it occurred. My second destination today is pretty Glen Oak Park, lush with trees and large green lawns. I enter the park via the west entrance at Prospect Road and McClure Avenue and park under the trees along the large oval central green. It's hot and humid today, but there's just a little breeze in addition to the plentiful shade, which helps a lot. There are two things that bring me here, both associated with the life of one man. Robert G. Ingersoll, who lived from 1833 to 1899, was a colonel in the Civil War, a lawyer, a politician, and most famously, an orator. Born in Dresden, New York, he lived in Peoria from 1857 to 1877. Ingersoll was often called the Great Agnostic for his trenchant critiques of religion. He was also an abolitionist, a women's rights advocate, and a promoter of the memory of Thomas Paine as a great American hero. Thomas Paine had made a clear and eloquent case for the cause of American independence from Britain in his best-selling 1776 pamphlet Common Sense. Then, as the Revolutionary War struggled on, helped inspire patriotism and perseverance with his The American Crisis series. Paine's once stellar reputation suffered over time, especially after his publication of The Age of Reason, an attack on Orthodox religion, and his vociferous public criticism of diplomat Silas Deane and of President George Washington. Ingersoll agreed with Paine's criticism of Washington. He thought that Paine was right to be aggrieved with Washington's decision to do nothing to deliver him from his captivity and sentence of death by the radical French revolutionaries under Robespierre. After all, Paine was condemned by the French revolutionaries for opposing the execution of King Louis XVI, who had been an ally of the American Revolution and who had provided invaluable aid to Washington during the war. Paine also criticized Washington's support for the institution of a state church in Virginia, which, of course, was a kind of thing Ingersoll would oppose as well. Ingersoll used his own eloquence to help rescue Paine's memory from disrepute and reinstate him as one of the moral and intellectual founders of the United States of America. Lincoln held similar sentiments to Ingersoll about Paine. In his 20s, he wrote an essay defending Paine and his deism, which his friends burned so that it could never be found and published. Lincoln had political ambitions already, and his friends, probably correctly, predicted it could derail any run for office he might make. Then, as now, real or at least assumed religious belief was a prerequisite for a successful political career, despite our legal commitments to freedom of conscience and belief. Lincoln was a religious skeptic himself, a non-believer as a young man who became a non-denominational believer over time. God entered his writings and discourse ever more often throughout the years, though tellingly, not so for Jesus Christ specifically. Lincoln preferred, for the most part, to keep the particulars of his religious belief private. The West Gate of Glen Oak Park is the approximate site of Camp Lyon, where Ingersoll was commissioned as a colonel of the Union Army in 1861, and where he raised his regiment. His first experience in battle was in the Battle of Shiloh, a particularly bloody engagement and a Union victory. He conducted himself well and was commended for his excellent service in many battles during the next year and a half. He resigned on June 30, 1863. He had been captured and then placed in charge of a camp of paroled prisoners who could not fight as a condition of their parole unless they were exchanged for Confederate prisoners. This system of conditional parole and prisoner exchange was common practice at the time. I'm guessing because it saved a lot of money and resources for both sides in feeding and housing prisoners. Ingersoll waited for months for an exchange to happen so he could return to active service, but this exchange never came. So he went home. Ingersoll thought he could be more useful returning to his law practice and entering politics than continuing to raid around for something that might never happen. While he was still in the field, Ingersoll wrote some very compelling, descriptive accounts of the battle, as did his fellow soldier who fought at the Battle of Shiloh, Ambrose Bierce. Ingersoll's contemporary accounts appear in letters to his brother. Bierce's account, called What I Saw of Shiloh, was written when he had become an experienced writer and published in 1881. If you haven't read Bierce's Shiloh account, I very, very highly recommend it. Bierce was a journalist and a prolific writer in many genres. He's also the author of The Devil's Dictionary and many other wonderful and skeptical satirical works. I think sometimes on the level of, as well as in the spirit of, Voltaire. He was a great admirer of Ingersoll, as was poet Walt Whitman, who was also Ingersoll's personal friend. I'll return to Ingersoll and Whitman's relationship in a future installment of my Ingersoll account. Bierce included Ingersoll in his delightfully irreverent poetic definition of the term Decalogue. It goes, "Thou shalt no god but me adore, 'twere too expensive to have more. No images or idols to make for Robert Ingersoll to break. Take not God's name in vain, select a time when it will have effect. Work not on Sabbath days at all, but go to see the teams play ball. Honor thy parents, that creates for life insurance lower rates. Kill not, abet not those who kill, thou shalt not pay thy butcher's bill. Kiss not thy neighbor's wife, unless thine own thy neighbor doth caress. Don't steal, thou'lt never thus compete successfully in business, cheat. Bear not false witness, that is low, but, quote, here 'tis rumored so and so. Covet thou not what thou hast not, by hook or crook, or somehow got." I continue south and a little east through the park on winding paths and roads, past playgrounds, fields, and a lagoon. I'm headed toward the statue and monument to Ingersoll near the southernmost end of the park at Abington Street and Perry Avenue. It's a handsome statue, portraying Ingersoll in his maturer years as a portly man with a very round belly. As far as I could tell from photos, Ingersoll was never particularly slim, though he was more so when he was younger, and I think when he was in his last year or so, based on facial portraits. His fleshiness gave him a very youthful look for most of his life, and I think a cheerful one. Especially then, being on the fatter side indicated that you led a happy life of plenty. The face of his statue, tilted slightly downwards, appears more serious than any photo I've seen of him in his later years. This, with his arms akimbo stance, can at first glance seem an almost stern portrayal, as if he's looking at you or something just beyond you reprovingly. But after studying the sculpture, I think it's meant to convey Ingersoll in deep thought, perhaps walking back and forth with his hands on his hips, as so many of us do when we're working out some problem in our own minds, or when trying to recall some important fact or idea. Most photos of Ingersoll show him with a little smile on his lips, highlighted by his somewhat dimpled mouth and cheeks. He has the face of a ready and kindly friend. I drive next to Peoria Historical Society's Flanagan House Museum at 942 Northeast Glen Oak Avenue. I had emailed their office yesterday in hopes of making an appointment, but haven't heard back yet. My research revealed that they have a portrait of Ingersoll on display. Since it's close enough to being on my way to my next destination, I swing by to see if someone happens to be around, but no such luck. I continue on to the local history and genealogy collection at the Peoria Public Library at 107 Northeast Monroe Street. There's a manuscript here by Romeo B. Garrett called The Negro in Peoria. I believe the only, or one of very, very few copies, in which I'm seeking more details than I have about Frederick Douglass's visits to Peoria. This manuscript served as Garrett's doctoral dissertation, I believe. Dr. Garrett was the first African-American professor at Bradley University. The people who work in this collection are very, very helpful, particularly Chris Ferris, who is there most of the time I am. I find nearly everything I'm seeking and more that I didn't know to look for. Thank you, Chris, for all of the help and interesting conversation. You're the best. I spend several fascinating hours here and discover much about Ingersoll, Lincoln, and Douglas in Peoria. My time in this city is a rich one, and I visit so many places linked to interesting stories that I'll break this up into a 2- or 3-parter. The next will begin with the sites I visit once I leave the library. To be continued. Ordinary Philosophy's website and podcast are independent and ad-free, and depend on support from patrons and listeners like you. To find out more about how you can contribute to Ordinary Philosophy, please visit the subscribe, submit, and support page today. And if you enjoy what you read and hear at Ordinary Philosophy, please share with those you believe will enjoy it too, and take a moment to rate and review this podcast on iTunes. And thanks, as always, for listening.